It's time again, once again.
Read Comics Podcast.
Episode 36.
Marty.
Okay, I'm Marty. And
I'm Chad.
I'm Mike.
Florence.
Susie.
And Jason.
Yay! And this is actually Chad's pick, who's also a new dad. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Congratulations!
Yeah, baby.
I didn't do too much for the whole thing.
Well, there was some involvement in
what?
It about 9 months ago.
Zoe. Good Doctor Who name.
Yeah.
And you cursed the child for the rest of her life.
Or you could go Sesame Street, either way.
And it's Zoe,
no,
what?
No.
Zoe
Aaliyah. Zoe,
oh,
what?
Yeah.
You gotta speak up.
I did.
Zoe Aaliyah. Okay.
Alright, so Chad, tell us about your pick.
I picked Annihilation. I kind of thought it would be a good pick to kind of compare against the previous podcast of the Green Lantern Sinestro series to see a big space war. And I know Mike had liked it, and it was kind of... I want to kind of see other people's perspectives on the different companies' huge space battles.
Had you read it before this, or was this new to you?
I had read it. Mike had actually told me about it, because I haven't been reading much Marvel at the point when Mike told me about it and said, hey, they're doing a really good space thing. So after Mike told me about it, I picked up some of the issues, and I'd have to say I like the main series more than I did the precursor series of all the, you know, the Silver Surfer, the Nova,
mm-hmm.
Super Skrull, and Ronin. They all had their good points. But.
So let's talk real quick about, you said the precursor series and then the
yes.
main series. Kind of just talk a little bit about how the whole thing was set up.
Yeah, give us a synopsis of the series.
It was kind of set up where you see the first strikes kind of in the limited series.
So there were some limited
series.
There
were four issue limited series leading up to a 8 or 6 issue series. So that was 6 issues in Annihilation, yes.
And it kind of highlights different major
players.
Yeah, you'd have to say from different warring factions, like the Skrulls control a huge part of space, and the Kree control a huge part of space. And then you've got the Herald of Galacticus. who
Sorry.
Controls, well, doesn't really control, but Galacticus
Our,
is a
huge,
huge
influence.
Force
yeah.
in of fear throughout all of these. And then you've got the Peacekeepers, which is the Nova Force, throughout all of the space, too. And it kind of
Yay, Novas.
Shows the first wave coming in and how it affects major characters that they've had through Marvel past that they haven't done a lot with. Like Ronan, the Accuser, when's the last time anybody's seen him? And Super Skrull...
Always shows
once
up.
Once in a while, usually
yeah.
Fantastic Four. But the Silver Surfer hasn't had too many titles lately.
He's had a few
one,
limited series
before,
up to that.
But it was kind of, you know, he hasn't had his own starring role where he's
not
done
really
anything,
the
Ronin really.
Series.
No.
Yeah. And,
go ahead.
Ronan, yeah, never. And the Nova Force kind of left out in the Marvel Universe for a long time. Sure, they've had Ricky Ryder or whatever, and Richard Ryder in the New Warriors, but they hadn't done anything with him for a long time.
Yeah.
And now you get to see the whole core together, and what he's just a small part.
It was definitely Marvel's attempt to revamp their cosmic line, which actually was pretty successful. They have now spawned 2 series from it, the Nova and Guardians of the Galaxy. They did a sequel to Annihilation, and they're in their third major cosmic crossover right now.
War of Kings.
War of Kings, yes.
And they've done cosmic series before that have been successful, like the
oh, sure.
Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah, but those were 10 years plus ago.
Yeah.
And this was their attempt to make it a major line again.
What do you think incited Marvel to... explore space? Do you think it was a cultural thing at the time when Annihilation came out? I mean, like the cultural success of, say, Firefly. Was this around at the time of Firefly or predated? You know, you had Firefly.
Came after Firefly, I'm pretty sure.
Farscape, Battlestar Galactica.
This was 2 years ago.
Do you think that, you know, the success of, like, Battlestar Galactica might have influenced them to say, you know, hey, maybe we should do some space war stuff?
I'm sure it had something to do with it. Personally, I think it's a combination of that, of DC's success in their cosmic stories, and the fact that they had Keith Giffen, who is pretty well known for his cosmic stories, to kind of spearhead the effort.
Disappointed that Lobo wasn't in it.
Oh,
or
so
anyone like
Lobo?
Thank
it.
God. I'm surprised they didn't throw Wolverine into it.
There was actually a moment where the main Nova guy looked a little bit like Logan. I was like, oh.
Although there was a X character in the Annihilation series, specifically, whose series was it with Gamora? Gamora wasn't the character, but it was one of her sidekicks.
I don't remember.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Giant space turtle in this.
No, I'm talking about
Cerise. Gamora is friend of children everywhere.
Shut up. I'm talking about Cerise from the Shi'ar lady from Excalibur.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Who had a thing with Nightcrawler way back when.
Is that on the chart?
It might have been. I don't know.
If
probably. There is stuff that the chart missed, but... Okay, so general impressions of Annihilation.
Go.
Jan,
it's your... Oh, all right, Susie, you go.
I only have read the preludes because my library... I guess it was very popular, and nobody ever had, even in, like, I through the entire Chicago suburban library system, like, it was never available. And I had, like, requested it the second we decided on what our next selection was, and that was, like, almost more than a month ago, and still in that time, never became available. So I've read the first two volumes, but not the third. So I've only read the preludes, which are kind of a mixed bag.
Sure.
What did you like best?
I like the very first one, the Drax of the Destroyer one.
Okay,
thing.
Interesting. What's the least favorite? I bet everyone agrees on this one.
My least favorite was the judgmental guy.
Ronan?
Is that the one? Who
yeah, Ronan.
I judge you.
Ronan
yes.
The Accuser, yes.
Yes, him.
Yeah, his was pretty bad, I thought.
What were they thinking with him? Is he an old character?
Oh yeah,
he's
incredibly
yeah.
old.
He used to be.
He's
Captain
way
Marvel's
back one of the Fantastic Four's villains from the Stan Lee days. Correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. He was. I think he was a Stan Lee Jack Kirby creation.
Mm-hmm. No, his. When you say what were they thinking with him? What do you mean? Like,
well, I wondered if it was like they, you know. I mean, why did they decide he should be part of this, I guess?
Well, he's always been a major villain. The one thing about this series that I kind of found interesting is that they took classic villains and put them in a more heroic light, at least
mm-hmm.
as far as being heroes to their culture. You know, it makes sense that Super Skrull and Ronan had been and Drax had been villains in the past because they were at odds with Earthlings, whereas when you look at their culture, they're probably considered heroes. But as far as Ronan goes, it was obviously the setup for what came after that, where he was actually the leader of Hala, which is the Kree homeworld. So he if that's where they were going with the series, it made sense that he's an integral part of it. But
his miniseries didn't really seem to have anything to do with the main story at all.
Yeah, that's what I remember, too.
Yeah,
I think
I agree. It more, I think, introduced people who were going to be used later, and I agree, it was the worst of the bunch.
Who wrote all the miniseries?
It was different people. Ronan was by Simon Furman, whoever he is.
Keith Giffen did Drax the Destroyer.
He also did Silver Surfer, and Super Skrull was, I am going to screw this up, Javier Grillo Mark Swatch, or something like that, I don't know.
And Nova was Dan Abnett and
Andy
Lanning.
Yes.
And they're still doing Nova, aren't they?
Yeah, or are they doing Guardians. I can't remember which. Maybe both.
Maybe both.
I think Keith Giffen's still doing one of them. Maybe Guardians.
I think one of the main reasons they did Ronin is because they kind of wanted to show the Kree Empire, but they don't really have any surviving full-blooded Kree characters. Captain Marvel killed, the guy that brought him, Yaren or whatever, and he's dead too. And how many other Kree characters, full Kree, do we know beyond their main villain?
Yeah. Plus, they wanted to establish that he was kind of disgraced from the Kree at this point, too.
So it really did seem like most of the miniseries were there just to
introduce people and set it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it did launch a lot of the, as Chad said, opening attacks, too, especially in, Nova. And I personally didn't care for Super Skrull all that much either. But most of that had to do with the art and some storyline elements.
There were some that, the art really, I did not like. I think it was I don't remember if they were calling it. It was right after Drax. I think it was Annihilation Prelude.
It was the Prelude,
And they seemed to have two different artists. And one of them, I hated, every single panel that person did. And, just a personal thing. I just did not like that style.
Was it the really one heavy line, Scott Collins? Is that?
Oh, Scott Collins, I don't care for in general.
It's been a while since I've read it. I just remember there was a switch. Every couple of pages, the artist would switch between this person that I didn't like and this other person I was kind of, I didn't really notice the art that much.
Huh.
It's interesting. I actually love the art in the main arc. It was really lovely.
Which I haven't read, so I don't know if it's the same team or not.
Well, and the cover especially.
The covers were all painted, I think, by Andrea DeVito.
Yep,
Andrea DeVito.
Is that the artist for just the covers?
Well, I might be wrong about the covers. Cover artists should be down here.
Cover paintings, Gabriel.
Gabriel Delato, sorry. Andrea DeVito
is the
artist of the main series.
So here's some of the Annihilation Prelude stuff. I mean, it's very cartoony in comparison, especially.
Whoa.
You can see, this.
I think it was the ones that dealt mainly with the Nova core. The person doing the art for those, I did not like that at all. And it brought me out of the story a whole lot.
Okay.
Okay, speaking of things that brought me out of the story, Annihilus is ridiculous. I just kept hearing this, whiny tantrumy voice whenever he spoke.
Starscream.
Totally.
I never thought of that. But then Annihilus is another classic villain, and I wanted to kind of ask everybody what you all thought of Annihilus as the main villain, because to me he was a little bit of an odd choice, because this is certainly beyond anything he's been capable of in the past. As he had always been a villain of the Negative Zone, and
but he'd been a ruler of the whole Negative Zone.
I suppose, what do you think, Jason? I know Marty and Florence probably don't know a whole lot about Annihilus's past, or Susie.
Well, it was weird to see him in the role that he had and not have the Fantastic Four
oppose him.
I guess in this case, it kind of makes sense because, if you think about all the heroes in the universe, for whatever reason, all the major heroes are on Earth.
Yeah.
And so, Annihilus always got his ass kicked by the Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
Always. And now he's doing all this major stuff, and he's steamrolling over everything, but he's not facing the Fantastic Four. So it's kind of all the characters in this are really B-list characters or lower, which isn't to say that they're not good characters or powerful characters or whatever, but it's kind of the fact that they have a B-list villain pitted against B-list or C-list or D-list characters makes more sense for me to know that Annihilus can actually do this.
But when you think of, the villain that took down Galactus, would you think Annihilus would be that villain?
No,
not at all.
you know, it all depends on how it's written.
Sure,
well,
sure.
I just sort of have this realization that it seems like every single character, like, you've got Annihilus, you've got Supergirl, you've got Galactica's Silver Surfer, they're all related to the Fantastic Four. They almost, none of them come from any other source, do they?
Well, some of them will, like, had gotten introduced and stuff like Silver Surfer series. I don't know where Thanos came from or anything like
that. Thanos seemed really important and really
old.
Thanos was an Avenger, or was it Iron Man?
And then went to Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And he was a big Captain Marvel villain
for
a while. And then he went on to the whole Galactic thing with the Gauntlets and stuff. Big series.
Let's continue with everyone else on their general impressions, though. But I'm curious to what Florence thought of it, because I know it took her a long time to get through it.
It's true. I liked it better than the Green Lantern, but it's still just not quite my thing. Like, the many, many characters, big fight thing, I tend to just zone out and fall asleep. But there are pieces of it that I found interesting. And, like, characters that I'm intrigued about, but I'm not sure if I want to read enough more to know more about them. But the little evil fairy on Thanos' shoulder, I really liked her.
I was curious as to where she came from, because I'd never seen her before.
She's been around for a while.
Really? Always hung out with Thanos?
Since some of the previous appearances, I don't remember exactly where. But
yeah, see, I don't remember her from before, but
I'm
I haven't
sure.
read anything for a long time.
Well, maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe I'm.
Is she like involved with
memories.
The elders of the universe? Which I'm surprised didn't show up in this. But,
you know, there were some interesting omissions in this, and one omission that I mean, they were mentioned, but I know that they didn't have the license. Although, you know, who even has the license anymore? I really wanted, you know, to have the Space Knights all over the place kicking ass.
Why don't they have the license
to
the Space
do
Knights?
Mention, they don't have the license for ROM, but they have the license for all the Space Knights, and they bring them in the Conquest series. That's right.
They
do.
I forgot about that.
But
they're not the same.
Oh, no, they're not. Like,
you know, I want ROM.
I want ROM,
and I want the Space Knights.
Parker Brothers.
This whole licensing situation, it's just gotten ridiculous. It's like,
I had
no
idea.
Use it, you
shouldn't be allowed to have it.
It kind of.
You know
well,
who
yeah.
is
yeah.
getting
it's,
a lot
it's
of good licenses? Dynamite. Is, like, Sorrow, Lone Ranger.
Yep.
They're Red Sonja. They're hitting a lot of these.
Well, and it's true that with licenses, they do actually have to use them every so often.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or
they lose
well, they have to
they
use it by a certain time, which is why back about early 90s, they threw out that crappy Captain America movie and crappy Fantastic Four movie just to keep the movie rights to those properties.
Yeah. And which also kind of explains these Annihilation series, these little series that happen every so often that dust off characters that you haven't heard of in forever.
It does seem like they were well used, you know, whatever these characters were. Ronan, I thought, in the main series, turned out to be very important, and his personality being established in his history was crucial to all of his motivations and to his ultimate destiny of being the new ruler of the Kree.
Okay. Jason, what did you think of the whole thing?
I enjoyed it. It's been a long time since I've read it. I didn't reread it for this, but the thing that struck me the most is this was going on concurrently with Civil War.
Sure. Also with the Shi'ar X-Men Civil War thing going on, which is why the Shi'ar didn't show up.
Basically, how compartmentalized everything was.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, Annihilus always got his ass kicked by the Fantastic Four, and it's like, why aren't the Fantastic Four being involved in this thing where Annihilus is conquering the universe and is eventually going to be coming to Earth, and where's the Fantastic Four and all this? Well, they're stuck on Earth with their
Civil War. Well, they address
that.
Well,
it does get addressed in this.
A prison in the Negative Zone?
And that's the other thing. That
came after the Civil War, though.
It's kind of, well, no, they
during,
were constructing
during,
it during
yeah.
it. But the fact that there was stuff going on in the Negative Zone,
but Annihilus isn't in the negative zone anymore.
Right.
Well, but doesn't Annihilus refer to... He feels like his territory is being encroached on. That was part of his motivation for this.
Well, I think that's kind of... That was before even this. I mean, that's like every time the Fantastic Four are going negative zone. Annihilus is...
It's like your vacation spot or something.
Encroached on. But that... It did seem a little contrived on occasion how everything was so compartmentalized. That, you know, we had the Shi'ar dealing with their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have Earth's heroes dealing with their thing. And then we have the rest of the universe dealing with this other thing. I mean,
well,
you think about World War II, everybody kind of got involved.
Well,
to,
not like... I'm sure
points.
There were people and, who weren't involved with that.
Well, I think I like that it was contrived, because if it hadn't been, number one, if they threw everybody into it, it would be way more massive than they could handle in this thing. And also, it answered the questions as to where are the Fantastic Four during all this?
True,
where are
true.
The Shi'ar? Why aren't the Shi'ar part
and
of
I
this?
Did like when Nova came to Earth to, you know, try and
bitch
get
about
help.
Them.
and he did bitch them out, bitch everyone. Who was it that he met with?
He only met with, you mean after the, he didn't meet with anybody during the series. He met with Peter Lord. When he said, "Have you been listening to the transmissions? They're having their own.
Right.
They're not capable of having
right,
anybody.
Right.
They address it indirectly by just talking about the fact that, you know, they're so close to Earth and there's all these heroes there and people who are going to be killed.
So they're
going to
get killed
them,
while they're shooting each other down there.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
Which was a very nice little address to the Civil War going on, because a lot of people assume that that's how Civil War would end, would be Annihilation Wave hitting Earth and them joining together, because they were scheduled to end around the same time.
I see.
Yeah.
How did Civil War end, or did it?
With Captain America surrendering. And had it really ended? Not entirely.
Yeah.
It was a lead into the next big
secret invasion.
Yeah.
There was a panel at Convergence that was about epic crossover fatigue.
Yeah.
I saw
that,
actually.
It's definitely bad. What did you think of the thing, Marty?
I actually feel like I liked the prologue part better.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the individual, like, storylines, except for Ronan, which really sucked.
Yeah.
But I think I liked the Silver Surfer one a lot, and, I also really liked, Drax's business, without really knowing anything about him. Like, I knew a lot more about the Silver Surfer.
Sure.
Who was the other one?
Nova.
Yeah,
Nova
was
good.
Interesting. I didn't like it quite as much, probably.
Hello.
So we're being joined by my coworker Tony.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. Susie on Skype.
Hi, Susie.
We're
hi.
This is Jason.
Hello.
And Mike and Chad.
Hello.
And I assume he knows Florence, because Marty just skipped over her.
So we were just talking about our impressions in general.
Yeah. Perfect timing.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
You've
to
read
Annihilation if you'd like.
Oh, I have.
Okay.
What
did you think?
All in all, that was me throwing up my hands a little bit. you know, I thought the first book was fine. It kind of drew me in, and the second book I got through, and. You know, they started out with some interesting characters, and then they went away from them for a long time, it felt like. Because I really liked the... and I don't remember any of their names, honestly. It felt like Marvel's attempt to make me interested in people I didn't really know.
Sure. I read them as they came out monthly, and like the first two books, since they were each separate series, pretty much came out simultaneously. So there wouldn't have been that, you know, the way they published it, they published two of them limited series together, and then the other two limited series together, so there would be that gap of character, where you went a whole book without seeing certain characters, whereas reading them monthly, I didn't get that because they came out at the same time, one issue at a time. So that's interesting. I really liked the main series much more than the limited series. I did enjoy Nova and Silver Surfer a lot. I actually don't remember liking Super Skull that much, and, you know, Ronan just kind of sucked. But I really liked the main series, especially some of the big moments they had. It definitely seemed like an epic movie to me, with big surprises and twists and climaxes. Like the fall of Galactus was a big moment for me. Something that you know I don't think anyone I ever thought I'd see in a comic book would be, you know, Galactus getting defeated like he did, and basically taking advantage of as he was.
I did like that aspect of it, the whole Galactus restrained and being drained and everything. That was interesting. And then especially...
with the shunt.
the way he was rescued. And
part of that was my other big favorite moment of the series, which was the death of Thanos, which, you know, on a monthly basis, that was a big... cliffhanger for me. It's like, oh my god, now what?
Okay, so there was a moment there that I absolutely had no idea what was going on. Right as Thanos was dying, like there was a flash, and there was some girl, and then someone has
that
Thanos
happens
heart
all
in
the
his
time.
Hand, and then I was like, all right, what just happened here?
I think that was death because he's he wants to be Death's boyfriend.
Yes, he's got this major love affair with Death because he's given so many souls to Death that. You know, Death... Okay, you got to keep in mind, Death as a character is used in both Marvel and DC.
So
you'll see Death personified a lot.
The Death that I'm familiar with? The
yes.
Neil Gaiman?
The concept of Death.
No.
Well,
no.
Kind of. And the fact that it's Death personified.
And is a girl.
And it's
a girl.
Well,
yeah.
Now, what pissed me off about that scene was that they made Death in Marvel look more like Death as she appears in Sandman comics. That is, with an actual girl with human features, whereas previously in Marvel, Death was always just the shrouded human-like woman.
And then in a different part, when he appears to Nova or something, he's standing next to a girl, and I was like, what the fuck? So that was Death 2.
Yeah, that was probably
different.
Death 2, but I'd have to see it again. Basically, what that meant was that she was showing up to claim him, which surprised the hell out of him because... You know, no one ever thought that that would happen. He had always been Death's lover and sent more souls to him than whoever.
Sure.
Than
so,
character-wise, Death is very different in the Marvel universe.
Yeah,
because
she didn't
than,
act anything like the Death we know of.
Yeah, I just meant to say in concept.
But
yeah.
The look was similar.
Yeah.
Similar,
which annoyed me. Can I say the
first?
So yeah, so when Thanos is introduced, like, right away in the beginning, like, he's with her.
Yeah.
And they're having a conversation.
Here we go. Here's
yeah.
the second time he's here.
And I think it doesn't help any that their her
yes.
talking bubbles
that's
are
death,
black,
think,
just like in,
yeah.
you know, just like in the Sandman
death
universe.
Death in Marvel is really a lot more of considered a villain than in the DC
sure.
universe.
Yeah.
But
so
DC, it's more conceptual.
Yeah.
Marvel, it's more literal.
But in the Marvel universe, she doesn't go around doing anything. It's, you know, Thanos is like, hey, I'm
doing
worshiping you.
She has agents.
Let me give you more
yeah.
people. But
yeah.
Thanos is the only one
but
that you really see hanging out with her.
Yeah, she's
yeah.
definitely, Death is more malevolent in Marvel than in DC.
Would you say Thanos is the hands of fate?
Oh my god.
He did have that one glove. Cue
the
haunting Torgo theme. I thought it was kind of funny that Thanos, for being the big villain he is, gets exactly what he wants, what he's been trying to get for since he was created, pretty much, is now he gets to hang out with Death. And he gets to be with her. Whereas before, he never really got to be with her.
Yeah,
he just worshipped her. Yeah, I mean, he gets...
Yeah.
He gets
in
the girl.
His way, he gets the girl, yeah.
But at the time when it happened, it was such a big shock to the series because, you know, the plan hinged on him.
Yeah.
I didn't see Drax stabbing him in the back or pretty much clawing through his heart like it did. And Moondragon's reaction
mm-hmm.
was pretty awesome at the time, too.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like a very good father.
No. I had totally forgotten that Drax was Moondragon's father.
Which is introduced in that first prologue.
Oh, it is. Oh,
had,
I missed that. Okay, so yes.
Yeah,
didn't
Mike didn't have this, like, the first part, the Drax prologue part that's on Earth. And so I never read that, having read all the rest of it.
Me
that
too.
Makes so much more sense.
Yeah,
it
still
like it
read
introduces
that.
A ton of stuff, and it's actually really interesting.
Yeah, and that's probably my favorite part of the whole thing was that one movie series. Because it's just such a much smaller story, but still, you know, has a big scope with all the space and everything. And you really get the feel for the characters. And even Drax doesn't get really introduced until maybe the second or third issue. And you're focusing more on the little girl.
Cammy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked her a lot.
Yeah, she's the one who ends up with the evil fairy in the end.
Yeah, I like the evil fairy more than Cammy
in the main series
because at the very end they show her kind of wandering around with her.
The fairies from the beginning of time.
Is that what she?
Oh.
That's
from,
right.
Like,
they did talk about
the
three old Galactus-like people.
Yeah, I had really no idea of like really Galactus or where he came from. Mm-hmm. Like, so like learning all that stuff, I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. And then the whole playing off the Galactus Eats Worlds, okay, I knew that. But then, you know, Silver Surfer having this problem with killing millions of people, and it was like, oh, you weren't really thinking about that too hard, were you?
Yeah.
But they didn't explore that much.
Okay.
You know? They just kind of brushed on it, it seemed.
Had
like.
You seen the Fantastic Four sequel?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. So.
I actually still haven't done it.
Lawrence Fishburne is a voice of Silver Surfer.
Yes.
Really?
But I'm
really?
Referring
yeah.
more to Galactus in...
As a cloud.
As a cloud.
Yeah.
He's more like the Ultimate Universe Galactus. And
yeah.
He is,
well, every
this
Marvel,
one, which is
Marvel movie seems
nice.
To be more of the Ultimate
version.
I think there should be more, like, mashups that involve Galactus and the King... / dad from Katamari Damacy.
Wow.
Like, they're so similar.
I understand why they wouldn't use Galactus
you know.
As he appears in the comics in the movie, because it's kind of hard to sell a giant guy in a purple weird outfit
odd.
And this giant
awesome.
Headdress. It would have been cool for the geeks, but not for the general
as opposed
populace.
To all the people who ran to see that Michael Bay crap to
yeah.
gold.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that.
Gee. You're right. Giant robot-looking things would never sell, Mike.
Well, Galactus isn't really a robot, and it's got a human face. So, you know, one thing that they've abandoned about Galactus in recent years is that the concept that Galactus appears to each race as a member of their own race. So, like, a Skrull would see a Galactus Skrull, and a Kree would see a Kree under the helmet. They've kind of abandoned that. In fact, I can't remember where exactly I noticed that they did, but basically everyone sees Galactus as a human in a weird purple outfit.
Yeah, I could really see her, like his eyes and his chin.
Well, yeah. And Galactus in the Ultimate Universe, that was... there are multiple Galactuses, aren't there?
I don't know.
I thought in the Ultimate Universe it was like a bunch of tiny ships or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, they're kind of all
like a
sure,
hive
mind.
Kind
yeah,
of
hive
yeah.
mind.
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, it's
right.
like the board. Galactus board.
Yep.
Yeah. I liked in the whole series, like Mike was saying, big moments that can really change this whole universe in space. I mean, you got Thanos, you got Silver Surfer now, again, a herald.
Mm-hmm.
And
more than
it
one herald.
Seems like he's driven with more purpose. Because for so many years he was just whiny.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I have to leave my love, and I've changed this thing, and I've killed all these worlds. Wah, wah, wah.
Well,
now he's out recruiting worlds to be destroyed again.
Yeah. I wanted to find out more about Stardust, because the little limited series at the end, you know, he became a herald again along with Silver Surfer, which is the first time Galactus has ever had two. And he basically had to exterminate his race in order to do it.
Yep.
So, that was pretty interesting.
And he also got Airwalker killed, too, which, you know, killing a Galacticus herald is no easy task.
No.
And here they're hunting him down like they're nothing.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of good that there's stronger, bigger powers out there than
the heralds.
The huge powers that are out there.
Yeah,
and
that was interesting.
And then they wipe out a whole planet of... Guardians.
Yeah, all the Guardians except one are gone, which is a storyline still continuing to this day. Quasar was killed, which was pretty big.
Yep.
Well, the Skrulls were killed, either way.
Yeah, the Skrulls lost their home world.
Which kind of worked into the Secret Invasion series they got, because now they're looking for a new homeworld.
Yeah, and it goes back into the Skrull prophecy saying that this was, you know, prophesied to happen, that they would lose their empire and return to their promised homeland, which was Earth, apparently. Yeah, there's a lot of big stuff like that that made it seemed like it wasn't just an ordinary event, that there was actually repercussions from this that would continue on. And they have.
That's good.
Yeah.
Like what?
Well, we just said.
Marty, you were reading the comments.
You're going to have to rewind and listen again, Marty.
And I like that they brought tiny characters that, like Star-Lord from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And in the next series, they bring Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah.
And
we brought Warlock.
Warlock.
Not just Adam Warlock, but
Warlock.
Warlock, the other Warlock.
Yay!
Yay!
And it's kind of nice that they're investing in tiny characters that maybe used to have a limelight or their own title.
Yeah.
But they're kind of bringing them back and showing, well, gee, these old characters were interesting and good, and we can do something with them now.
Well, and it's really always all been about who's writing them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when they have good writers writing the stories, they can do a lot with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it
yeah.
doesn't matter how small the character is, if you have a good writer,
sure,
it's going to be a good story.
I just like kind of digging into who the characters are and finding these old things that they, you know, kind of revitalizing their old titles. Like Star-Lord, you go and you look him up and, hey, he had his own series. And kind of gets you interested in the whole past. And it used to be Marvel and DC both used to always have the editor put in a little asterisk and say, see issue so-and-so for this. And they don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you were saying on one podcast, anybody can Google something.
Yep. Yep.
I like that you'd be able to refer to past issues right then and there. It used to be nice to say, oh,
well,
I could go do that.
Without
that
nowadays, will people know reading something, know that something came before that, or that it was referring to something, or would they just be confused by it? You know
well,
what I mean?
And
like, would we have ever known that Star-Lord had this huge past before reading this?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that if in the trade they, or even in a single issue, they had C issue
yeah.
number what, which, good luck finding that, you know?
Yeah.
Well, see, nowadays it'd be perfect, because anybody can find anything online.
Yeah, well, not, yeah, maybe. You know.
Although,
actually, they put out a trade called Annihilation Classic. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
It is basically a trade filled with a whole bunch of series from the 70s and 80s that introduce these characters. Like, they have the whole Rocket Raccoon miniseries in it. They have the, they have first appearances of,
So was Rocket Raccoon in this?
No, he shows
no.
up
he
in
shows
the next
later.
Series.
Oh,
and
right.
is now a big player in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Now, is that actually an anthropomorphic raccoon?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and does anyone take that seriously?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I do now.
He's a cool character.
He is a really cool character, because when I first saw him, I'm like, oh, I remember back in the 80s.
He was from Hulk comics, wasn't he?
Yeah, and you
I
look
remember
at him
back when
like,
I was a kid, and I thought,
yeah.
you know,
a little
raccoon.
Cute little raccoons
yeah,
were cool.
I get it.
Yeah.
But when you read the series, you're like, oh, he's, you're like, this is going to be totally
you know
lame.
What, Marty, you
but
would
he,
read it and you would enjoy
so
it.
Much <in what's laughs> yeah,
well,
he's
already decided not to, but...
He's a raccoon that's you kind of underestimate him. You're like, oh, cute little raccoon. Tactical genius.
Yeah.
And that's what sells the whole thing right
the
there.
The funny thing
so
is though... The funny thing is, though, is that...
A little bit better than that, I think.
The funny thing is that all the other characters make fun of the fact that he's a raccoon also. Like, they
really?
First see him and they're like, what, a raccoon? You're kidding, right? And then it starts smarting off at you, and you're like, oh, okay.
Well, they are kind of vicious.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they can get rabies easily.
Yes.
Yeah, I actually... I have to say that what I most enjoyed about the whole Annihilation sequence is what has come out of the Annihilation books.
Yeah.
Which, as we said, it's Guardians of the Galaxy, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And Nova, which is really good.
Good also, yeah. I didn't really enjoy Annihilation Conquest, although that's actually what spawned Guardians of the Galaxy.
True.
And there was a few more character introductions or resurrections in that. And then War of Kings, I'm starting to read a little bit of now. I'm a little bit
now,
behind in it. It's
War
okay.
War of Kings, they're actually tying the Shi'ar back into it.
Yeah, Shi'ar with Inhumans.
And the Inhumans. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed not to see them in here. Because they mentioned them in passing and were like, yeah, they're staying out of this. And I was like,
yeah.
Oh, wait, I know them. Darn it.
Well, they were kind of restricted to the moon at the time, and also we didn't know it at the time, but their leader was a Skrull. So, at least I assume
yeah,
that's when it happened.
Well,
but
so wouldn't he have been invested in...
Yeah, when he... When,
defending
when,
the Skrull homeworld?
Well, no, they did reveal when Black Bolt got revealed, and I, from what I understand, it was quite a while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's... Well... all the various Inhuman series they've had over the past 5 or 6 years and trying to figure out how all of these things work into continuity has been kind of a nightmare.
Yeah.
I mean, you have the Inhuman series. What's that?
Sometimes it's best not to think
about
it.
Yeah, just not think about it too hard.
Yeah.
But also during that time, they had... Quicksilver had taken the
Terrigen crystals, yeah.
Or, yeah, so they had no way to keep going with their culture. And they were trying to get it back from the U.S. government.
That was an aftermath of House of M.
Yeah.
So
it was slowly playing out a little bit between Civil War.
Yeah. It's not like they were ignored. They had their own storyline going again. So
yeah.
That, you know, any of the missions were kind of been able to be explained to a certain extent.
I never saw them as a spacefaring
neither did
people
I, really.
Either. They used
well,
to be
but they tie into the Kree.
And then,
yeah.
They, yeah. They're like the Kree wanting to evolve. I also thought the Supreme Intelligence being lobotomized was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Because the ruler and more than just a ruler for the whole race, he guided everything they did.
The idea that, you know, that they're lost without him.
Yeah.
Lost culturally.
Yeah.
We're talking about the Inhumans here.
No,
the Kree.
Oh.
The Supreme Intelligence is that big green blob with all the tentacles for hair.
Oh,
yeah.
He
was also a former Fantastic Four.
Well,
Avengers.
Yeah. Well, no, probably Fantastic Four. Probably around the same time the Kree were introduced.
Yeah, probably along with the Ronin, the Accuser, and
yeah.
All that. I'm sure.
Isn't he supposed to be like the some consciousness of the dead Kree?
I think so.
Yeah. So having.
Like
all
the
of their dead
the
people
lords,
lobotomized, and they give out all the advice. Kind of pretty amazing.
That concept was actually used in Doctor Who for the Panotropic Matrix.
Which came first, mm-hmm. Supreme Intelligence or the Matrix? In Doctor
Who. I think the Supreme Intelligence, because that was in the 60s, wasn't it?
Probably.
Yeah, and then the Matrix in Doctor Who wasn't brought in until the 70s.
Hmm. They also found time for a little bit of a queer element in the series.
They did, yes.
With the
Moon Dragon
and the new Quasar.
Yeah. Of course, it goes back to my theory that it's much easier to put hot lesbians in than, you know, gay male characters.
Well,
the one
Peter David would disagree.
Well, yeah, after how many decades... We finally have two guys kissing in Marvel Comics.
Yeah, that's true. I agree. Although nowadays, though, I think
Richter and Shatterstar in an issue of
X Factor.
And did you read Rob Liefeld's response?
Yes.
Oh my god! He's like, dude, Shatterstar's not gay. You guys suck. I can't believe you did that. I can't believe you made Shatterstar gay. I'm gonna start writing again so I can fix that.
Yeah.
Oh god.
Oh please.
Somebody's gonna let him write.
Oh,
well,
I
writing is very. Peter David put out a response to that.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll have to find that.
Yeah, find it because I won't give it justice. It was something about. I can't remember.
Peter
was,
David's response was bad.
It was a big diss on Rob Liefeld. So I feel.
Well,
so.
I want to read it then.
Yeah, you should. I won't do it justice. That's what.
Oh, you. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm kind of
what you mean now.
Disappointed with how they handled their relationship because. They have an issue with
Moon Dragon
and Quasar because Moondragon becomes some big dragon thing. Can't they leave her as a human and they have a regular relationship?
Yeah.
Quasar was a guy.
Well, Quasar was
no,
a guy and then died, and then you'll find this out if you read the main series. Phyla Vell, who was she during the limited series? Was she Captain Marvel?
She's the daughter.
She is a daughter of Captain Marvel, but what name was she going under?
Mm.
She was. She may not have actually
Captain
shown
Marvelette.
Up. Yeah, I think she was a Captain Marvel, but she actually didn't show up
Mary
until
Marvel.
The main series, I think. Susie.
Susie Marvel.
and yeah, you find out that she and Moondragon are a couple, and at the end of the series, she gets the quantum bands and becomes the new Quasar. But recently loses them, and is now going under a different name, and Moondragon's back alive again.
Where'd they go?
And who else is back alive?
The original Quasar. But not exactly. He's more...
He's
like
more Obi-Wan.
Yeah, he's more Obi-Wan.
He's
not the new Quasar, though. Nova's the new Quasar.
Did he
right
take
now.
On the persona of that huge flying space head? The other
no,
space
no, no,
head?
No. You're talking about the Nova Core consciousness.
I
can't remember what they call him.
And are they still playing with that being in Nova's head?
Yeah, but just recently, first it became corrupted a bit and actually fired or took away the power from Nova and created its own Nova Force. It was corrupted by something and eventually then purged its consciousness into a new consciousness, and now this female is the world mind, that's what it's called. Now this female voice is the world mind.
See, I liked the conceit of the world mind in the guy's head. It was just fun having people react against this guy running around arguing with himself.
Yeah. And if you
very far asleep.
And if you read the Nova series, it goes into that a lot.
You know, it just now occurred to me that that's a lot like the new Blue Beetle.
Oh, yeah?
I haven't read that.
Blue Beetle.
Does he also have somebody in his head that he argues?
Yeah, he has the Scarab. Is a voice in his head that no one else can hear that advises him on how to use his powers. Although the Scarab's advice on how to use his powers is basically to destroy things a lot more than be heroic. You know, it's like... But yeah, very, very much the same way where people are like, who are you talking to? What are you doing?
I actually get annoyed at World Mind more often than not. It seems like...
Well,
something
it's self-serving, you know.
Yeah.
But it's doing its job, you know.
Its job just has different priorities.
I like the idea that Richard Rider basically his purpose is to preserve the culture of the Nova Corps until they can rebuild it,
mm-hmm.
and therefore, the World Mind's main prerogative is to keep Richard Rider safe so it doesn't die.
Yep.
Whereas Nova wants to help everybody and everything, and sometimes the world mind says, nope, can't
it,
do that.
It's kind of interesting how, I mean, clearly the Nova Corps and the Green Lantern Corps have very strong parallels to each other. But just the fact that
you know,
both
short
of
a ripoff, are you saying? I would say it's a ripoff.
The fact that what happened to the Green Lantern Corps in the 90s, you had it
reduced to
one lantern.
Yeah.
Mm. Now the Nova Corps got reduced to one Nova.
Sure.
What are they called?
Nova Prime.
But what's a Nova?
Centurion.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just how many similarities?
They're not frat boys.
They kind of are.
I like how
they have keggers.
How Nova Richard wasn't a leading Nova personnel. He was just kind of like almost
a grunt
warrior,
yeah.
And here, just because he's left alive, he's chosen, and it's
kind
not
like Kyle
Rayner. Yeah, kind of. It well, pretty much, definitely like that. But it was not the great heroic. You know, oh, he's the greatest. That's why he's got the Force.
How did Nova get? What's his origin?
How are they recruited?
I don't remember. Was that in New Warriors?
If Johnston was here, he could tell you.
Well, no.
Because
I mean,
he had
Nova
his own
was,
series in the
70s. That was even before. Nova was in the 70s, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah.
who's the human rocket, and he was just some like high school kid.
Yeah,
and when
Nova gets or Richard Rider gets no respect from the rest of the Nova Corps because he's a human, a lot like Hal, actually, when he first started meeting other Green Lanterns, you know, people like, oh, never thought I'd see the day when an Earthling was a Green Lantern. And it is kind of amazing how... That is so not fair.
Eat some sugar.
Florence brought out some chocolates after her nap. If you were wondering at Florence's absence, it's because she was dreaming about Galactus and Thanos and that... She was podcasting in her mind.
They were happy in their place.
Okay. I don't know. We didn't talk about art. Oh, we did a little bit about
art.
We
did.
Yes.
And I looked it up. It was Scott Collins that you guys didn't like.
Yeah, I've never liked his artwork.
Scratchy,
heavy
line.
Well, one thing that really bothered me is every time the Novas flew, they lost the lower half of their bodies.
You mean they became like a rocket?
I guess, but they suddenly had nothing below the waist.
Wow.
Yeah.
I see your point.
It's
like Robert Liefeld drawing technique.
It's
don't
part of
don't show their feet or their extremities.
He's always had that. It's just been drawn better. Because he's been known as the human rocket when he had his own title.
Well, let's look at him done by another artist.
Yeah,
let's
see if it's done better.
He's
doing a lot of sitting down in this one.
That's slacker.
Now, you were saying that you didn't like the art in the Super Scroll. Someone was saying they didn't like the art in the Super Scroll.
I did not at all.
Because it's, and I'm finding that I'm actually more... I'm getting more accustomed to cartoony style art a lot better and finding that I actually enjoy it quite a lot.
That's better.
Depending on what it is. Not everything.
Is it because you're reading more manga-esque titles?
No,
or?
In fact, the manga that I've been reading lately has been very non-manga-like.
Can I just interject and say manga?
Manga?
Yeah, bitches.
Every time I hear somebody on a podcast saying manga, it drives me crazy. It's
how about
manga.
Mango.
Minga.
I'm just going to call it Japanimation.
You said Jap for a second. I'm like, whoa, you're going to leave it at that?
I'm going to call it Japanese drawings.
The way the A is pronounced, if you see an A and it's a Japanese word, it's
ah.
Susie won an award for her Japanese language skills in high school, so she wins.
I see. I may still, on occasion, say manga, though.
Manga.
Okay.
I will try to remember, but... You know,
I think cartoony manga-like art has its place. I don't think this was one of them.
Well, that wasn't very manga-ish either. It was just more cartoony.
I didn't think it set a good tone with the other titles. Not looking that way and trying to be a cohesive story.
I agree.
Trying to have this, I wouldn't say serious, you know, battle tone, and it kind of seemed more kiddy. To me,
yeah,
than a big war story.
Yeah, it made me take the story a little bit less seriously.
Which one?
Of course,
Super Scroll.
Super Scroll. Of course, you know Bugs Bunny does do a lot of violent things, and he's
yes.
pretty cartoony. And
yeah, I think that might have been a more effective story had it not been drawn that way. Because it was like when I got to the end, I was like, "Oh, that was
that
was
cute.
Not my least favorite of the stories for sure." That was interesting, and there was development and. But
yeah, Susie, I'm interested since you didn't read the actual main series. Now that you've read the limited series, are you interested in reading the main series, or are you gonna just kind of put it on your
mind? Well, hearing about some of the stuff that happened in it, I am now. Before we started talking about it, I was just like, well, okay, whatever. I've got tons of other stuff to read, but I do kind of want to
get some closure.
Exactly. Although it sounds like stuff just keeps going and going and going.
Oh, of course.
But
yeah, it felt like closure to me when I read the series.
Yeah, there is closure, but they also kind of give you, like, you would see at the end of a movie where they might show a character in passing and show them where they are.
And what happens is that every single character dies, and then that's it.
That would be cool.
Yeah, like when I forget who it was, when he told the Otherverse guys, now you behave, seriously. I'm going to let you go now. But, I was like, oh, really?
Yeah, right.
I'll probably do that.
I wasn't a big fan of the resolution in that the remainder of the Annihilation forces kind of had their own section of the universe. I didn't...
Yeah.
It was interesting, but I didn't think it was that great. And were they ruled under Blastar? If I remember correctly? No, it wasn't Blastar.
What's his face?
It was one of Nihilus's.
Right,
the guy's
lieutenants. Like, I live to serve or something.
Yeah.
I did like that they still had a force around, because where are all these, I mean, a whole universe of warriors, where are they supposed to go?
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
just
why
go
not go, yeah, why not go back to the universe?
The negative
thing?
Zone.
Yeah,
but
they've been
doing this for, you know, how long?
Didn't they have something to say, they explained somehow that the negative zone was shrinking?
Yeah, they did say something about that.
So it wasn't just that their territory was being encroached on, but that the
it was
fact
like
that
their habitat was being
diminished.
Yes.
Can
yeah.
I ask,
they
what
probably
exactly is the negative zone?
It's
a
parallel
universe. Da da
da. Discovered by Reed Richards.
There's millions of them out there.
And, well, and this one in particular is
separate but equal.
It's
this one's negative.
it's always been a something.
Numbers go backwards.
That has been, it's been a part of the Fantastic Four history since the 60s, and it was a place where a lot of their villains came from. Blastar came from there, Nihilus came from there, they had plenty of adventures, and it also is a, when you travel there, you don't feel well,
it seems like a bad place to go, and not just because of
yeah,
that.
It's not just, I mean, it's not just another universe. It's not healthy for...
In fact, I'm almost positive that traveling through the negative zone is what caused Sue Richards to miscarry her second child.
I think you're right. And it's been used in a lot of series as kind of an unpleasant place. Well, kind of like the Phantom Zone, sort of.
Kind
of
like...
Not necessarily a prison, but of the Phantom Zone... In that, like, with the whole Captain Marvel, Rick Jones thing, where they would switch places. Or was that Captain Marvel and Rick Jones?
Yeah.
They would switch places, and when one of them was in our universe, the other one was in the negative zone.
Okay. Not unlike Milwaukee.
I would say more like Detroit, really.
Okay.
So what's with all the bugs? Like, are bugs the native inhabitants of the negative zone, or is that just,
it's just how he
Annihilus
looks? You know, that's how Annihilus
is
look. Yeah.
They've kind of, though, I think they have said that the negative zone is rife with insectoid life forms.
Things with exoskeletons.
Yeah.
I just had...
Do you think Annihilus is a hero to his people?
Well, obviously.
He's a ruler, anyway.
Yeah.
He's an oppressive ruler.
And there is the resistance as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they
Blastar has always been an enemy of Annihilus's, even though they're both villains of the Fantastic Four.
Yep. They kind of did make this out to be a lot like a world war type of thing, where you had a resistance, and at the end you had a truce and a treaty, and things were carved up, and people were given different parts of the world and everything, or the universe and things like that.
Cool.
Are we wrapped up with Annihilation? Do we want to announce the next book club?
Yeah, and this is Susie's pick, so she should announce it.
Okay. I have picked two books, but they're both very small. That's why I chose two. American Born Chinese by Jean Liang Yang. And The Eternal Smile, also by Jean Liang Yang and Derek Kirk Tim.
And we have a date chosen already.
Sunday, August 16th, 2 p.m.
2009.
And we'll have a posting up on the website with the titles and the date and time. I think we're really prepared this time.
I know.
Now we just have to read it.
I've read the first one, and it's very entertaining. I think that it won't take long for people to read, and you'll quite enjoy it, too. Can I ask, Susie, how did you come across it?
Okay, well, I had bought American Born Chinese one day, and I was just in a bookstore and saw it and thought it looked cool. And then I took it home and read it really quickly and thought it was great. And then I was looking up, you know, to see if he had anything else out, and this was the next thing listed as coming out, and so I bought that too, but I haven't read that one yet.
Cool. Well, yeah, I just kind of came across it browsing in the library, so... But we can save, you know, the rest of our stuff until everyone else has read it.
It's kind of neat that we're
doing the podcast.
Going away from Marvel DC, which we did the last two podcasts, and now we're going back into the indie realm.
I don't think there are any space cops in either of these.
I'm
not reading it.
I'm drawing some in.
Just in the margins.
Oh, did you all hear that?
Oh, my God, I know
that,
what you're going to say, yes.
No, not at all. I bet you don't. The... ABC has announced that a spinoff for Lost.
What?
actually, this was reported in The Onion, so you know it's fake. But I couldn't pull it off as a serious story. they said that the Smoke Monster was going to get its own sitcom. There's a very funny article at TheOnion.com.
So you knew what I was...
No.
Okay. Well, we were talking about Space Cop, so I thought you were going to talk about the other news that broke recently about who has been cast as Hal Jordan.
Oh, yes. Deadpool.
Ryan Reynolds.
I heard it was between him, Justin Timberlake, and...
Yeah, some other guy.
The other guy?
There's a third guy.
You're serious about
that. Thank God it's not Justin Timberlake.
I can't imagine how Justin Timberlake was even in the running.
I don't know.
But I still...
Massive amounts of people going to see the movie, maybe?
Yeah, perhaps.
And it was probably a low vanity project for him. Like, ooh, I should play a superhero. I don't mind Ryan Reynolds too much. He's okay. I think it's dumb that he's going to do both Deadpool and Green Lantern.
Is Deadpool really going to happen, though?
That's what they're saying.
It doesn't seem like that franchise has enough life in it for...
Although I could certainly see him abandoning Deadpool to do Green Lantern.
Yeah. Actually, you know, I thought it was great when I heard he was cast in the Green Lantern movie. I'm like, awesome, they're putting Nort in the movie. That's great. I know, no one else got that. Mike got it, but...
The dog Green Lantern.
Yeah, the dog Green Lantern, yes.
Stupid. I mean, I think he's cute, and he's very successful right now, so I'm not surprised.
He knows how to quip.
Everyone's...
So the movie's going to be quippy. He can quip.
Well, but Hal Jordan isn't a quippy character.
Well, how do you know it's going to be Hal Jordan?
Because they said he's podcast as Hal Jordan.
I thought they just said it was Green Lantern from what I said.
I would actually find him better as
John Stewart.
John Stewart. Either Guy Gardner or Kyle Rayner.
They should have gotten John Stewart to be Hal Jordan. That would have just been funny.
It kind of would in a weird sort of way. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, that's been in the works for a while.
Seth Rogen is playing the Green Hornet?
Apparently he lost a bunch of weight for the role. And... Yeah.
Mm, weird.
I've seen him on an interview
really
where he lost quite a bit of weight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I had heard someone that they had cast Kato, and I don't remember who.
Huh? Interesting.
I don't think he was the first person cast to play Green Hornet. I think a long time ago they had another one. Everyone's...
What? Really?
Yeah.
The Green Hornet?
Uh-huh.
So...
I do not know what this movie is.
When is that going to be around?
It'll be interesting.
It'll be a dream. The entire thing will be a dream.
When is that coming out?
Tomorrow.
It's
going to be next week.
Oh my gosh.
No, it's not.
When, Susie?
When is it coming out?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't think it's filmed yet.
They haven't even started production yet.
There we go.
I think they might have just started filming.
When is Master of Space and Time going to come out?
Oh, I don't know. That'll be...
I'm so excited.
Is that a remake?
It's a book. It's a book by Rudy Rucker.
I'm thinking of The Wizard of Space and Time.
Yeah.
Not that.
Speaking of Green Lantern movie and stuff, did you see the fan trailer that somebody made?
Yeah.
On the site.
Yes.
And
yeah.
It's a whole bunch of clips of Nathan Fillion and clips from like Green Lantern video games.
See,
and other
Nathan
stuff,
Fillion.
And
I could see Nathan Fillion as Hal Jordan.
Everyone
yeah.
wanted Nathan Fillion, even though his name never came up as a contender for this. So.
But like, just the person who did this must have spent hours and hours.
Yeah,
it was
really
good.
Yeah.
Actually, like a movie I would go see.
And that's exactly what I thought.
Ooh, I thought they might have gotten would have been someone like Kurt Russell or something like that
what?
To be Hal Jordan.
He's
a little bit old
but,
now,
yeah.
but
yeah, I could I
could
even see that.
He probably could have done a very good job. Yeah.
Here's a question.
He could have been Alan Scott.
What, I mean, what do you think they're going to do with this costume?
Make
I mean,
it,
is it just going to be a spandex?
I don't know. They might do belts and like cargo pants or something like that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I don't know. They haven't really been shying away from spandex in the movies.
Not really. No.
Well, it doesn't even really have to be spandex. With it, supposedly it could be like a light construct and stuff. So they could do
armor or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
you know?
He can always put something on over his stuff.
How much you want to bet? There's at least one scene of. The ring forming a hand flipping somebody off.
Oh my god.
It'll happen.
Yeah.
It's Ryan Reynolds.
At least a big boxing glove.
Interesting, interesting. You know, you mentioned the body paint. I actually came across a picture of a Wolverine in some sort of solstice parade from out in California, which was it
nice.
Was just body paint.
Wow.
Nice.
We went to the Solstice Parade in Santa Barbara and we did not see any body painted Wolverines.
I think this was more Bay Area.
Yeah. We were expecting it to be a little bit of more
just
of a wilder ball. Day and it wasn't really.
Chad said, just one claw. And it was sharp. And laced with adamantium.
Oh, I actually listened to a spoilery review of Wolverine the other day because I figured there's a movie I'm never going to see. And she was talking about the idea that adamantium bullets were like the big, you know, thing that could affect him. And she's like, by that logic, should regular bee bullets be made of human bone? Like,
it's funny. So they actually put in the movie that only adamantium bullets can affect Wolverine?
Something
that's,
like that, apparently.
That's terrible.
I saw this episode of Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, and where it had to do with the X-Men. It was one of the most awesome things I've ever seen. It was so ridiculously awful.
Did they yell at
but,
Iceman for not for abandoning them? For leaving the team to hang out with Spider-Man?
They were trying to recruit Firestar.
Oh.
So
screw Ice Man.
Like, something happened, and of course the mansion is under attack, and all the X-Men get, you know, diverted, and they, divert in rooms in the mansion. Like, they manage to capture Wolverine in a room that just happens to be there in the mansion that's made from anti-adamantite wall.
Xavier's been building one secretly for years just for that reason.
It's all soft and squishy.
All the stuff that just neutralize all the X-Men.
It's his timeout room.
The thing is, I can see those being used as like training type things, you know.
Well,
yeah, literally, you're speaking of the episode that got me into comic books. I religiously watched that, like, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends every weekend, but when I saw the X-Men one, something clicked.
Yeah.
And I, like, literally that weekend biked to the drugstore and picked up, like, one of my very first comic books.
Aww.
It was an X-Men comic, or X-Men in a comic, that made comics click with me also, and that was, as bad as the series was, it was the X-Men's appearance in a Secret Wars comic.
Oh.
That made me click. Because when they were getting their ass handed to them by Galactus.
Yeah.
That
right.
Like, oh my god, these people are cool. Didn't find them. So.
I'm just saying, like, I'm sure, you know, it was very effective at a certain age, but having watched it as an adult after, you know, reading the comics, it's just such a...
Yeah.
It's just awesomely bad and very entertaining in that sense.
Nostalgia 90% of the time bites you in the ass.
Well,
yeah.
That's
let those things be great in your mind.
You know what?
Revivals bite you in
the
ass.
The Latin root of nostalgia
does have the Latin word for pain in it.
Nice.
It's like painful memory or something like that. Or,
you know what, though? We just watched The Labyrinth the other day with a couple people who'd never seen it, and I thought it totally held up.
Well, it really depends on what it is. I mean, Labyrinth and Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends are
different caliber.
I mean, one of them was Jim Henson.
Yes.
The other was... Who the
Stan
fuck
Lee.
Ever?
Well, Stan Lee was narrating the episode. It was very obviously his voice.
True believers.
And Mrs. Lion came in to save the day.
Mrs. Lion. Oh, my
the
God.
Little dog.
Yeah, I remember.
They actually had a... they kind of brought in Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends into the Ultimate Universe.
I never picked it up. I heard they were going to do it. They put out some press for it and everything.
Yep. Spider-Man and Iceman teamed up along with Firestar. And the Firestar in the Ultimate Universe is actually not Angelica Jones. It's...
Houston.
No, it's... it's someone from Spider-Man's past when he was in high school. A girl... God, I can't remember her name now. But... It was like this girl. It wasn't Mary Jane. It wasn't Gwen Stacy. But there was another girl.
Betty Brant.
That was in Liz. Yeah, Liz Allen is Firestar in Ultimate Universe. I think.
Mm-hmm.
She in the regular series ends up marrying Harry Osborn, the Green Goblin's son, and they have a kid together.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
In the current series or
in,
way back when?
Well. Back in
the old times, he died.
And 90s when
back they, before they changed everything.
Yeah, before they negated 90% of his history with this
brand new day. Yeah, that's another podcast
though. And Firestar wasn't even a Marvel character.
She was for
the cartoon, and then they did a miniseries after that, and he made her like 12.
Well, she was a mutant.
That's true.
A stinking mutant.
But I thought it was strange you made her 12 at the time when Spider-Man's, what, 20-something?
Who knows?
Oh, speaking of that, so getting back to Annihilation, it kind of bothered me how they kept changing how old Cammy looked.
Oh, I didn't really notice that too much.
In the original in the drafts, she's supposed to be 11, even though she looks right at 13. They say she's 11.
That is not.
That.
Yeah, that's not what she seemed like in the main series.
But then in the next one, she shows up, she looks about 15. And it just seemed to keep getting, like, every single artist just could not figure out how to draw an 11-year-old. And it was just to varying degrees.
No, I thought she was, like, 17. I thought she was a love interest.
I never thought she,
whoa,
I thought she was just
what?
A kid.
Whoa!
I see clearly in the next one that she's a woman.
I didn't
and
read that.
Another podcast, too.
At the most.
Is this your own fantasy?
Drax, you naughty boy.
I don't know if we got any of the stuff you were saying there, Susie, because everyone was laughing and talking over you. So, can you repeat what
I
you had said?
That, yeah, in the Drax series, it's very, very clear that they say that she's 11. They never quite make her look 11, but she still looks like a minor, very young, maybe 13. And then every series after that, when she shows up, she looks late teens. You know, it's just odd.
Yeah, in the main series, well, I didn't read the prelude part, so in the main series, I had no idea she was supposed to be an actual child.
It really seems like a lot of artists today have problems with drawing kids consistently from series to series. Kind of like Pixie in X-Men being drawn by Greg Land.
Don't get me started.
And it actually makes me think of, you know, a series that is near and dear to my heart where the kids were drawn like kids for the entire length of the series.
Let me guess.
Power Pack, the original Power Pack. Not talking
about
the new cartoony one. I'm talking about the original Power Pack, where they,
the
whole 60 issues, I think, they were drawn.
Well, that was also the basis of the series, too.
Yeah, true. But, I mean,
you didn't have someone coming in and giving Julie power boobs, you know?
Yeah. Here's a 10-year-old stack.
Speaking of,
you
I just read the latest Runaways.
Yeah.
And the writing was really good. It reminded me of being like,
yay, finally.
And I gotta give all credit to the writer whose name escapes me.
Actually, I have it in the other room. Yeah, no, I had the same thought. I just read it, and I was like, this is great, and it
is
wasn't...
Is it not Terry Moore anymore?
No,
no,
it's
he's
totally different.
It was, you know,
I'll get it out for
old,
you.
Old New Mutants writers,
like,
or New X-Men writers.
None of the characters look like...
Yost? Yeah, Craig Yost, I think it is.
Really?
It's Craig Yost, isn't
Chris
it?
Yost
or Chris Yost?
Almost unrecognizable, especially Nico, who just looks like this random goth girl with a huge rat. And,
yeah.
Like, she doesn't even look aged. She just looks like a goth girl with a huge rat.
Yes, yeah, Chris Yost is correct.
Chris Yost or Yost.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, bring it. His writing's awesome, but the art, man.
No, you're
yeah.
totally right.
Oh,
yeah.
This isn't...
And all the characters seem to have, like, red cheeks and noses. Like, they're really drunk.
I don't think this is the latest one. Susie, are you talking about the one where she visits the X-Men?
Drunk.
Yeah.
The next one.
No,
oh,
the one after that.
Oh, I'm talking about the one where
this one was
the
terrible,
X-Men.
I thought.
This was Chris Yost.
Well,
the same,
I
don't
yeah.
know if it's the same person writing this one.
Okay, may not be.
But I really, really thought the art, the writing on this latest one was really good, and the art, like, just
well, no.
was making me crazy. Like, I couldn't... Victor didn't look like Victor. Yeah, Nico especially looked... Wrong.
It looks a little over.
Drunk because all their noses had been colored red and their cheeks were red.
No,
it looks
yeah,
a
what
little
I'm
over rendered.
Is the same thing. Yeah. There's one.
I don't
really
think the art in
following.
This one, the one that Florence has here, which was the X-Men one, the art was much better than it had been in previous months, though. When they had Terry Moore was writing.
Yeah, that one, but at least up till then, the characters looked like themselves. They didn't look exactly like what they had been drawn, but they would you recognize them.
I think Molly is the only one that looks like herself in this. Everyone else looks wrong.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the same artist or not, but in this latest one, like, they just didn't look like themselves. I mean, you could tell it was Carolina because she had long blonde hair. You could tell it was Chase because he also had long blonde hair. And you could tell you the two girls, like, Molly, was they were shorter. And Molly had lighter hair, and Clara had darker hair. But Nico, like, that's not Nico.
And this is sure I'm not having that much of a problem
yeah.
with it.
Well,
but, yeah.
But previous yeah. ones, I could...
You know what I'm talking about, so...
Yeah.
And then there was the whole drunk... Everybody looked drunk.
Apparently, we have a late arrival.
Now that we've done...
Now that we're pretty much done with the project.
Yeah.
I was trying to be at the after it was over.
Okay.
Well,
come
well,
give us your impressions. Should we, okay.
No, just finish up.
Okay.
Jason Johnston made a cameo appearance.
Cameo appearance without actually contributing. That's fine.
We could ask him how Nova got selected.
Oh, that's true. Jason,
yeah.
We do have a question for you. We were wondering how Richard Rider became Nova.
Origins of Nova.
Oh, I don't remember Richard Rider's origin. What? He was just some dumb kid.
Yeah, did they come recruit him? Did he? What?
Did he find a magic helmet?
Alien probe?
Like,
what?
The Green Lanterns get chosen, or do they enlist?
No clue.
Okay,
I read it as a kid.
We'll
have to Wikipedia it.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
thank you
for that idea.
Yeah. Remember back when we said Jason might know?
One thing
we
turns
out we were wrong.
Yeah, the origin of Nova, which I read, I don't know, 20 years ago.
If only there was a source of information at our fingertips that could tell us that. If only there was a
All right.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
We're signing off.
Goodbye. Thank you for listening.
Anticlimactic.
Bye.
Go read Annihilation. Tell us what you think. Not that any of you will. Lazy bastards.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.